We'll begin our episode this week with a passage from the book Glories and Laments, written by Alexandra Hetrard. Quote, "Having arrived at Gottelsfont Priory, halfway on the gold road between Skingrad and the Imperial City, I resolved to make a side trip to view the magnificent ruins of Sayatatar, or Shadows of the Fatherwoods, in the ancient alien tongue. After many hours of difficult travel through tangled hawthorn hells and limberlosts, I was suddenly struck dumb by the aspect of five pure white columns rising from a jade-green mound of vines to perfect V-shaped arches and graceful capitals towering above the verdant forest growth. This spectacle caused me to meditate on the lost glories of the past and the melancholy fate of high civilizations, now poking like splinter shards of bone from the green-grown tumulus of time-swept obscurity. Within the forest tangle, I discovered an entrance leading down into the central dome of a great underground edifice once dedicated to Magnus, the god of sight, light, and insight. Dimly lit by the faded power of its magical pools, the shattered white walls of the enclosure shimmered with a cold blue light. The marble benches of the central plaza faced out across the surrounding waters to tall columns and sharp arches supporting the high dome. From the central island, stately bridges spanned the still pools to narrow walkways behind the columns, with broad vaulted avenues and limpid canals leading away through ever-deepening gloom into darkness. Reflected in the pools were the tumbled columns, collapsed walls, and riotous root and vine growth thriving the dark half-light of the magical fountains. It was by these ancient, faded, but still active magics that I knelt and contemplated the departed glories of the long-dead alien architects. Gazing through the glass-smooth reflections of the surrounding pools, I could see, deep below, the slow pulse, the waxing and waning of the Welkin stones." It's the Elder Lore Podcast, and today we are talking about the rise and fall of the aliens. The Ancient Ones, the Wild Elves, the Heartland High Elves, in their own tongue, the Aliens. They built Tamriel's first empire after migrating to Cyrodiil from the Somerset Isle. In fact, the name Cyrodiil itself comes from the Eliadune root word of Cyrod, which means heartland. At the height of their power, the Eliad Empire was vast. The ruins can still be found in Cyrodiil. They are but a fraction of the Empire's former glory. The Eliads were responsible for harnessing magic directly from the stars, which we will talk about later, in addition to being pioneers in the art of alteration magic, mastering techniques in shapeshifting, levitation, and so on. As we learned in the previous passage from the book Glories and Laments, they were also master architects. They were devout worshippers of the Daedra, much like their Khymer cousins in Morrowind, and were rumored to even have the ability to call on their aid for blessings, power, and military strength. Their close relationship with the Daedra would help them enslave the Nadic people of the Heartland for many hundreds of years. They would most likely have appeared much like their Altmeri ancestors, though perhaps slightly darker of complexion. Also, like the Altmer, they do not recognize the four elements of natural philosophy, being earth, water, air, and fire, but rather the four elements of the ancient Altmeri religion, earth, water, light, and air. The major difference being that the Altmer believed fire to just be a corrupted form of light, and that light, having come from the stars, our firmest connection with Aetherius, was the purest form of magic. As Hetrard discusses in his book, which we read earlier, the light sources the aliens used in their vast subterranean cities, temples, and sanctuaries were in fact magical lamps, pools, and fountains of only the purest magic. Erlav Gerol writes in his book, Magic from the Sky, of aliens harvesting meteoric iron and glass from shooting stars and using it as the primary components in the construction of their wells. There are a number of theories as to why these wells exist, but it has largely been disproved that the wells form linchpins that connect ancient lines of magical power. That leaves the most likely explanation to be that these wells collect and store magicka from direct starlight. The wells can be visited in the game Oblivion, and if the user is proficient enough in magic, their stores, their personal stores of magicka, can be refilled by said wells. The meteoric glass is also used in the construction of alien Welkin stones, which translates to sky stone, and the Varla stones, which are star stones. These devices store and radiate magical power, making them excellent light sources. But it's also possible that they, in addition to the wells, served some kind of greater ritual significance. If they did, however, their secret was likely lost with the aliens. Right smack dab in the center of their vast empire, the aliens build their greatest stronghold, the White Gold Tower. It would later, after the fall of the aliens, be known as the Imperial City, of course. We talked about it briefly in our episode about the towers and their stones, so we won't get into the metaphysical aspect of the White Gold Tower. Instead, we will turn our gaze just south of it for now, where a young girl is born in the city of Sardavar Lied. At the time, the city was a hub of trafficking activity, and the young Alessia would have seen hundreds, if not thousands, of Natick and Nordic slaves pass through the streets. Mora House would later explain the purpose slaves served in the Greater Aeliad Empire in his memoirs. He would say, quote, "Men were given over to the lifting of stones and the draining of fields and the upkeep of temple and road, or to become art torturers for strange pleasures, as in the wailing wheels of Vindisau and the gut gardens of Sersen, and flesh sculpture, which was everywhere among the slaves of the aliens in those days, or worse, the realms of the Fire King had Hul, where the begetting of drugs drawn from the admixture of daedrons into living hosts let one inhale new visions of torment, and children were set aflame for nighttime tiger sport." End quote. Mora House was known as a consort to the so-called slave queen Alessia. It is also looked on as a cultural hero to these Cyro-Nords who were enslaved under the aliens. And there is also a unexplained connection to the Thum, meaning that perhaps Mora House was dragonborn or otherwise associated with Kinnereth, who the Nords called Kine. Also from the memoirs, Mora House says, quote, "In your tales you have many names for her, Al-Esh, given to her in awe that when translated sounds like a redundancy, the high high, from which come the more familiar corruptions, Alashut, Esha, Alesha. You know her as Paravant, given to her when crowned, first of its kind, by which the gods meant a mortal worthy of the majesty that is killing, questing, healing, which is also Paraval, Pevesh, Perenthu, Perif, and in my case, for was what I called her when we were lovers, Paravanya. Though she is gone to me, she remains bathed in stars, first empress, lady of heaven, queen Ut-Sirad. End quote. And so we see that, according to Morehouse, the name Alesha is, in reality, just a corruption of her title, Al-Esh, which means High Highness. Whatever her name is, she spends her youth praying to Akatosh and the other Aedra to deliver her people from the powerful and violent aliens. She is granted 3 visions and is joined by 2 champions, Morehouse and Pelennor Whitestrake. And so it is that in the year 242 of the First Era, Alesha builds an army and, with her champions, risks open rebellion. Though many view Alesha's slave revolt as the end of the Iliad Empire, Herminia Sinna takes a different opinion in the book The Last King of the Iliads. The first 2 centuries, according to the book, of the First Era saw a lot of political infighting between Iliad lords within Cyrodiil. While free Nords came south from Skyrim to help Alesha in her rebellion, what historians often leave out is that she probably had just as much help from rebel aliens who saw an opportunity to grasp more power for themselves. In fact, in the time following the uprising, a number of aliens lords remain in power in Cyrodiil, even until after the year 263, as vassals of the new empress. Some archaeological research shows that some Iliad sites show occupation and even expansion up to the year 498. Some of the more loyal Iliad lords would have even been given land that once belonged to enemies. This peace would last until the teachings of the prophet Maruk began to spread across Tamriel. Attitudes toward the aliens disintegrate, and one by one, alien settlements in human-owned lands would be put to the sword. Of course, at this point, seeing the tipping of the balance, many aliens simply left Cyrodiil. They would migrate and be absorbed into the elven populations in Valinwood and in High Rock. And in fact, the contemporaneous rise in power of the Dureni clan in High Rock might be linked to the exodus of Iliads from Cyrodiil. The Dureni clan themselves and the Alesian order, a product of Maruk's teachings, would come to blows again before long, which would effectively crush the Alesian order movement at the Battle of Glenumbra Moors. The Dureni would be so weakened that they would be pushed out of High Rock, and though the Alesian Empire continued, strict teachings of Maruk would somewhat fall out of favor. At this time, the Iliad city of Nenalata was the capital of what remained of the once great Iliad Empire, and would most likely become the final resting place of the last king of the Iliads. Kier Jo Shorvac writes in his book, The Wild Elves, about Cherhane Firay, an Iliad sage who lived at the end of the First Era and the beginning of the Second, that puts him over 2,000 years after the fall of the Iliad people. Firay apparently speaks very openly about his people. It would seem that some Iliads fled into the deepest forests of Cyrodiil and perhaps live there still, though their fate as of the invasion of the Aldmeri Dominion seems somewhat suspect. The Thalmor would not, by design, seek them out to kill them, so perhaps they survive yet. According to Ferre, the fractured and disconnected tribes of Eliads that persist have evolved away from each other and vary widely from their common ancestors. And so, the culture that gives birth to Tamriel's first great empire, an empire that stretches across all of the Heartlands, comes to an end. It's the Elder Lore Podcast. Thanks for listening.